So our next presenter is going to be Darren Godfrey, who is with the University of Arizona, and she's going to be presenting on vegetative propagation of
Waiuli.
Thank you. Thank you for saving me. So I'll turn it over to Darren. Thank you very much.
All right. Hi, everybody. So as I was introduced, I'm Darian. I just graduated from the University of Arizona in May. And during my last semester there, I was working with Dr. Dennis Ray on the Waiuli project. And so this is a large project that the ultimate goal is to breed a line that has a higher amount of latex in it. But I'll get into that in just a moment. So what I'm going to talk about is what is Waiuli first off and why do we want to propagate it and breed it. And I will go over our experiment and our results from that and kind of where the project is headed next. So Waiuli is a xerophytic shrub. It's native to the Chihuahuan Desert, so Texas and Mexico area. And we want to grow it in Arizona and in the Southwest because it is adapted to the high heat, the drought conditions, and the alkaline soil that we have. And it has ornamental and industrial uses. Our industrial use is the production of rubber primarily, but it also produces resin, and then the waste product from those products is also used as a biofuel. So there's been sporadic use and research on this plant over the last 100 years or so. So initially, the first industrial use was in the early 1900s in Mexico. They would collect the plant from wild stands and process it there. They had multiple processing facilities. And this industry died when the Great Depression hit. And then later, during World War II, we were running low on supplies, and we needed to get more rubber for tires for planes and things. So there was an emergency rubber project that focused on propagating and breeding and producing this plant. And so that photo on the right is Dr. Akira Kageyama, and he was actually working on this project while he was in Japanese internment. And so after the war ended, that project was cut. They destroyed the majority of the plants that were being grown. And only in the last 30 years or so has there been another push to breed and grow this plant. And one of the most attractive parts of that is the biofuel byproduct. And it's also a domestic kind of rubber. We usually get rubber from Hevea, which is tropical, and so we can't really grow that in the United States as much as we could Waiuli. So why do we need to vegetatively propagate it? So one of the big reasons is that, so it's from the Asteraceae family, so it produces achenes, which are technically the seeds. They're just simple fruits. And so these achenes are really small. They're kind of difficult to harvest, and they're really difficult to thresh. It takes us a lot of time and effort to clean them up. And in addition to that, they have a really complicated sexual reproduction. So there's a lot of weird stuff going on with the ploidy level, and there's a lot of apomixis, which causes clones. And in addition to that, what I mean by they can have low viability is that some of the achenes will have non-viable embryos in them, and so they can't be they can't germinate. And so we want to do cuttings to avoid these problems, and that will assist us in our breeding programs. And so the goals of these breeding programs are, one, to get a desirable growth habit that's easy to harvest, easy to grow in a field. We also want to increase the rubber content, and we want to select for other desirable traits like disease resistance. So if you guys want to know more about the disease resistance, John, right over here, will have a poster on that at 2:30 in the International Ballroom, and he's looking at the selecting resistance for Texas root rot. And so we've used some of our cutting techniques to help his program already. So our experimental design, we used herbaceous first year's growth. We used tip cuttings from the shrubs that we grew in the field. The length of these was about 5 to 7 centimeters, which is about 3 to 4 nodes. We removed the bottom two-thirds of foliage, and the cuts at the bottom were angled 45 degrees just beneath a node. And the materials that we needed, we decided to use a one-to-one mix of coco core to perlite. This would give us high moisture retention, high humidity, but also a good amount of drainage. And we used 200 cell plug trays and sharp, clean pruning shears. We cleaned everything with a bleach solution before we did anything. And we needed lots and lots of Waiuli. And so you can see two of my coworkers there, Quinn and Megan. That's us working at the Controlled Environment Agriculture Center, making our cuttings. And so our final material was the applied hormone, the auxin, and that was the variable in the experiment. So we wanted to define a useful range of hormones. There were previous experiments done like in the 40s and everything, and we referenced those, but a lot of the data about applied hormones was kind of all over the place. It wasn't really clear what was helping the plant root. So we picked these ranges, the 500 parts per million to 2,000 parts per million of either IBA or NIA, and we did an additional combination one to just see how that went, and we used water as our negative control. And so the hypothesis was that we would see a curve within these ranges and that the peak rooting would be around the 1,500 parts per million of either auxin hormone there. And so to apply that hormone, we made a liquid solution. We would dip the cuttings 10 at a time in the correct treatment, swish it around to remove air bubbles, and then let it sit for another 50 seconds or so for a total of 1 minute application. And we used 4 different germplasm lines that were kind of representative of what we had planted in the field. And so with our 4 replications and 10 cuttings per treatment, we had a total of 1,600 cuttings in our first experiment. And they were randomly placed within the trays, and then those replications were randomly placed on a mist bench with bottom heat for our first experiment, because we did our first experiment in January. And so when we collected the data, we gave a qualitative score of the rooting. So you can see up here, I've got the range from 1 to 7, excluding 2. 2 was no change. But we had 1 as a dead cutting, and then 3 started to show some differentiation, some callus, but no rooting had initiated. And then 4 to 7 were all rooted plugs. And so our results from that first experiment, they were really kind of all over the place. So you can see the error bars on here were really high. So 3 of the lines, AZ3, the 11693 and the 593, had no statistical difference between treatments within lines. So a big reason I thought this was happening is because this was our first time doing propagation. A lot of the students that I was working with had never done cuttings before. So there was a high amount of variability in the size and the quality of the cuttings. So that needed to be fixed. And something else that could have been causing this high variability is that maybe our hormone range was too narrow, or our application time was incorrect. Or another reason could just be that the hormones weren't actually affecting the rooting, and maybe we needed to find something else that was going to affect rooting for us. And so the AZ3 is in green up there, and the R1100 is the only one that had a statistical difference. So the 1 star above there show that they're statistically different from the other hormone applications, but they weren't necessarily different from the one with 2 stars. That one was the highest there. And so that's the IBA 1,000 parts per million. So that's kind of in the range that we were thinking. So we decided to do, So what I just talked about, we wanted to do, we needed higher consistency in our cutting quality. We needed to address the hormone range. And I didn't put any of that qualitative rooting scores up there because it was just a by eye. but we saw that a lot of the IBA and NAA combinations had a lot of those 6 and 7s well-rooted plugs, so we wanted to explore that and see if we could get a better result with different combinations. And we also decided to use AZ3 and 11693, because you can see up there they were the ones that rooted the most out of the four. And AZ3 is kind of more of an herbaceous plant, whereas the 11693 and the other two are a little more woody. So that kind of still gave us a representative with our second experiment, which I've got the hormones up there. So we tried a bunch of different combinations of IBA from 1:1 to different ratios. And from that, we got a little bit better results. So this was also done in May, so the time of year may have caused better results. But AZ3 is there on the left, and you can see that all of the ones with the stars were the statistically significantly the best. And with the 11693, we had the best rooting in the 1,000 to 500 parts per million IBA to NAA. And we also had the second highest was the 1:1, 1,000 parts per million IBA to NAA, which also worked really well for AZ3. So our conclusion was that for now we're going to use that hormone concentration because it worked well for both of those lines. But overall, AZ3 is not hard to root, and the lines with herbaceous material are easier to root than the woody ones. And for further experiments, I would want to test different lengths to see if reducing the size on those more woody cuttings helps root. And we also wanted to experiment with different application times and see if that was causing any trouble. So thank you very much to everybody that helped. Dennis Ray was our PI. I've got Tanya Quist in the audience, too, and she was my advisor. She helped me get on this project. She spent a lot of her time helping me with it. And John was super helpful in helping make the cuttings. So thank you. And any questions?
Can you describe really quick, does this plant grow to a maturity and then is all destructively harvested?
Yeah. Yeah. So the way that so the question is how is the rubber extracted from the plant? So they're grown in field, and right now, kind of the way that they do it is they do destructively harvest. They'll just cut down the whole shrub once it grows to like its max size, which is generally like 1 to 2 feet. And so they'll cut it down, they'll let it dry, and then it's ground up, and then they do a chemical or a pressure extraction to get the rubber compounds out and the resin compounds out.
It doesn't.
As far as I know, they have to replant the field. Yeah. So eventually, it would probably be easier to be doing that by the achenes, but the vegetative propagation is definitely to help in those breeding programs and to get... Yes.
I would think with Apomixis, you could have a clonal... You could create a clonal plantation if you could find a parent through all Apomix. Or is it parental, or is it a mixture of Apomix?
The question for the recording is, can we get a clonal line through Apomixis only? And so, no, it's really unpredictable when the Apomixis is going to occur, and it's really complicated. I wasn't working on the breeding part, but as far as I'm aware, it's really hard to predict what's going to be clonal or what is going to be non-viable. And so it may be further down the line, but currently no.
And you mentioned something about phloidy level. What's the phloidy level that we're dealing with here?
It's really variable. Dr. Ray might know a little bit more about that, but I'm not too sure.
It can go to octoploid.
Octoploid?
It can go to octoploid.
Okay.
Most are tetraploid and diploid.
And most are tetraploid and diploid. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.